Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPBC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Welcome, welcome. We're here at To Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Now streaming live at 947WPVC.org. And this is MC Blair. I'm sitting here with the lovely Amy Leeser. She's our guest today. She's a nurse practitioner with UVA System. Hi, Amy.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. And anyway, we'll be back with more about Amy in a moment, but right now it's time for headlines. Oh, my goodness. Well, the global organic food and beverage market expected to nearly triple by 2022. Yeah. You know, they say it's going to reach around $327 billion by 2022. Today, it's only $116. Organic beverages account for 60% of that, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? And then it is. Well, I didn't have Amy's microphone on. I'm such a bad boy.
I'm here now.
Yay!
Thanks for having me.
All right.
We're all awake over here now.
Yeah, finally. Oh, my goodness. And so, like I said, the beverages, you know, you see them all the time, organic this and organic that. Organic fruits and vegetables are second. And they've improved organic practices and increased awareness regarding the health advantages of organic foods. Do you all remember the Dirty Dozen? It's a list of produce.
The Environmental Working Group.
Exactly.
What a great organization.
I know. Well, just to give you an idea, the strawberries, apples, nectarines, peaches, celery, grapes, cherries, spinach, tomatoes, sweet bell peppers, cherry tomatoes, two types of tomatoes. Cucumbers is number 12, and since it's a baker's dozen, we've got hot peppers, kale, and collard greens at number 13. Those are ones, always make sure if you're buying any of that to at least be organic. If when they're in season, right here locally, that's even better, you know, as long as it's sustainably grown. Actually, Amy came in this morning with a smoothie. It's got blueberries in it.
Yeah,
as well as some other
and
stuff.
Greens, yeah. I always say make sure you wash them off. That's the best way to make sure you get those pesticides off there and wash them off. And you know, you mentioned strawberries, and
yeah.
I know that the EWG researchers, so that's a nonprofit environmental research organization based out of Washington, you know, that really has the public interest at heart. And when they researched the strawberries that they sampled, they found that 98% had pesticide residue.
Oh, man.
And that 40% had residue from 10 pesticides or more. So in California, where most of the strawberries are grown, each acre is treated with 300 pounds of pesticides. So make sure you're washing those strawberries. And
yeah.
They're healthy. They're great.
Oh,
we want you to eat them.
And make sure if you get them organic, they won't have the pesticides.
Yeah, there you
right?
go. Yeah, get them locally or grow them in your backyard.
And that's chemical pesticides, folks. There are some organic approved pesticides, but those are things like I know of one that is derived from geranium, so it doesn't have any excessive chemicals or chemicals in them at all. It's a natural pesticide, which is pretty cool. But you know, right now North America is 80% of the organic production, but Asia Pacific is they're thinking they're going to grow at an unprecedented rate in the future. And it's already the fastest growing segment in the grocery business, but it's crazy. But even despite that, the demand for organic is up so high that we still can't meet it here in North America. So they have to go overseas. One of the things that the USDA has come up with is a grant program. They are going to reimburse 75% of the organic certification fees, including travel and, you know, putting up the inspectors in a hotel and all that sort of thing. So they're going to reimburse 75%. So they're trying to encourage farmers to transition, which is great, you know, because we have to meet those demands, and, you know, supply and demand, it says that's what it is, you know, so
that's economics.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you mentioned EWG. Well, here's another one. The founder supports an organic fee for marketing research. And the reason, obviously, is, you know, we've got the industrial farming going out of control, which causes things like toxic algae blooms in waterways, cancer-causing pesticides on food that we feed our children. And, of course, kids are more susceptible to that. And you see that all the time. We're going to talk about that later. Oh, by the way, later we're also going to break down a typical menu, roasted chicken and potatoes and green beans and all that, and show you why you should at least be organic, and which, of course, better would be local and sustainably grown. And then pasture-raised chickens, which you can get all year right here in Charlottesville from a number of farms. Matter of fact, I was there this morning meeting Hayden, who helps Erica and Joel out there at Free Union Grass Farm in Free Union, and getting my chickens and pork and just wonderful people out there. So it is the fastest growing market, we can solve the organic farming problem by educating the kids, right?
Yes.
And adults, and get existing farmers to transition to organic. And of course, that program by the FDA will help them do that. Will take them, give them some, you know, relief from the money that it costs to go organic. Quite frankly, I was out at Carter Wallace's place, Farfield's farm in Afton, and they're so beyond organic, it's just amazing. Call it eco food, you know. Ecologically grown, sustainably grown. Big emphasis put on carbon sequestration and all that, and it's a wonderful place. And we'll have Carter on at another time, probably in a couple of weeks. You know, another thing there is hummus the answer to the global food waste crisis? Interesting. You know, we waste a lot of food.
We do.
We really do. And, you know, I've always said, not just for the hundreds of millions of hungry people across the globe, but also for, you know, your wallet and the stability of the climate. But there's a gal over in London called Hannah McCollum. She started a startup called Chickpea. And there's one way to deal with all those issues, hummus, right? So she takes all this food that is too ugly to go into the grocery store, or too big, you know, that kind of thing. And she turns it into hummus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a great way to do it, right? They say that getting food from the farm to our fork eats up 10% of our energy budget, 50% of U.S. land, and 80% of the fresh water, right? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that when we go to the grocery store, we're always rummaging through to find the prettiest vegetables.
Yeah.
So what happens to the ugly vegetables?
What a great
destiny for them. And then they end up in us in a healthy way. And
I know.
Hummus is healthy.
Yeah. You're listening to Your Health on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Amy Leeser, nurse practitioner with the UVA system. You know, 40% of the food that we grow never gets eaten. 40%.
Wow.
I mean, that's like $160+ billion worth of food ending up in the landfills, right? And if we just reduced the loss by 15%, we could feed 25 million Americans every year.
Wow.
With just that reduction in waste. And that's why this gal over in London has come up with the idea of turning this into hummus. So you've got, you know, a tremendously healthy food,
yeah,
right? And you put it on chips or bread or just eat it.
What a great way to recycle that food. Yeah.
And she's doing like beets and all sorts of stuff in there. What's she got here?
I would love to taste this. I've got some great flavors.
Yeah, carrots, ginger, turmeric, banana, avocado, and banana peanut butter.
Wow.
Yo, with cocoa.
Yeah, I would love to try
that. Yeah. So hopefully we'll get those, you know, she'll do well, and either somebody over here will pick up on that and start it. I think that'd be a great thing for somebody local to do, because there's just all kinds of stuff that gets tossed away or just can't be sold. For some unknown reason, you know, just like you said, it looks ugly. Yikes.
Yeah. We want the pretty stuff.
But it tastes so good. Right. I know. The other thing, there's another headline here is that U.S. dairy farmers are leading the global food waste epidemic. Right? Did I say academic?
Yes.
Epidemic. That's with a P, folks.
Yes. Okay. I'm with you.
More water. They have, they're dumping tens of millions of gallons of milk just this year would fill up 66 Olympic swimming pools.
That's a lot.
It is. And
it's hard to imagine.
Well, the dairy prices are dropping,
right?
You know, and got a lot of excess milk. You know, oh gosh, years ago, we had the same problem. And have you ever heard the term government cheese? You haven't, right? You're too young.
Tell me more. I'm curious.
Well, it's basically what happened was they had all this excess milk. And so, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with it? Well, let's turn it into cheese and give it to the poor. And so they started giving all this cheese to the poor and anybody on subsistence at the time. And so since it came from the government, hence the name government cheese, well, that opened up an entirely new market. And so, you know, the whole thing about cheese is good and all that. And, yeah, cheese is good. You can't eat very much of it. You just don't want to eat a lot of it because of casein, and that triggers your opiate receptors in your brain.
Interesting.
And so if your opiate receptors are triggered by whatever material or substance, then that leaves the ability to be physiologically addicted.
Interesting.
And so you talk to somebody who really likes cheese, and you say, you know, you might have to give up dairy. And they'll look at you and go, I'm not giving up my cheese.
Interesting.
Yeah. And because it's that same response, you know. And if you haven't had it for a while and you get it and you start thinking about it, believe it or not, you will start to salivate automatically. You'll start to drool.
That's something I haven't read into.
Yeah.
So that's
it's amazing.
Interesting.
It's absolutely amazing. So, yes, you can get addicted to food, folks. You really can.
I do like cheese.
So. Yeah, I know. So do I. So
I
do
have
I.
to say that just hearing you talk about cheese, I'm thinking about it, despite the time of day.
Well, we put a little feta in our eggs with some green onions.
Oh man,
it's so good, just delicious. Those local pastured eggs, you know, nice and dark yellow or even orange yolks, because they've eaten all those greens.
Right.
And oh man, it's just yes.
I love to
it's
see those
so
bright yolks.
Good. It's so good. They're finding more uses for dairy. You know, everything from subsidized school lunches to fast processed foods. Oh no, stay away. So lots of people are getting in the mix to help suck up all this extra dairy. You know, McDonald's and Yum Brands, which is I think that's Burger King Yum Brands, and they have some other ones, Taco Bell, Domino's. So they're sucking up all the excess dairy in the form of cheese. That fast food is really not very good for us, unfortunately. Processed food, they add all these additives, you know.
Yeah, that take stuff out and add stuff. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, you pasteurize the milk, which kills everything that's good, and then they have to add back you know, the vitamin D and, you know, everything that E and all that sort of thing that you get in milk. But those additions are simply, they're not the full matrix. It's just, you know, drops of this and drops of that. Whereas when you get the full matrix in the food that those supplements come from, then you're getting the full digestion and the full benefit, you know.
Food is inherently good. Food in its natural state
is medicine.
It's inherently good. Hippocrates that said, "Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food."
There it is.
A great quote that I love.
That is a great quote. Now that was Hippocrates, right?
Yes.
And now doctors take a Hippocratic oath, right? From Hippocrates. So why haven't they added that one in there? That one says do no harm, right?
I think they need to
put that in there, you know, and make that at the forefront, because I think that would, I know that that would change a lot of people's thinking. They would turn more towards diet. There would be more emphasis on nutrition in the training, and we would have a healthier, you know, country. For sure, less sickness and lower doctor bills, lower co-pays, you know, insurance rates would drop. Man, hey, we found something. No.
We certainly have an epidemic of chronic diseases that are related to diet and lifestyle, and so I think looking to that as a solution makes sense.
It's true. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, 94.7, and we're talking with Amy Leeser. She's a nurse practitioner with the UVA system. You know, I have this other beautiful headline here. School lunches across the U.S. may be moving towards healthy organic food. Awesome, right? So normally I say school lunch, right? So what do you think? Gooey pizza, floppy fries, wilted salad maybe, or local pasture chicken, pasture-raised grass-fed beef hamburger, local veggies? Well, you probably think about the first one, right? The gooey pizza and the fries and all that. Well, there are advocacy groups across this country, folks, that are making a difference. It pretty much started with Edible Schoolyards, Alice Waters out in Berkeley, California. We have a local program here called Schoolyard Gardens. As a matter of fact, Alice Waters came out here and helped them establish the Schoolyards Gardens. And it's in the middle schools and in Charlottesville High School here. We also have the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, UACC, Todd Niemeyer, is running that, and those guys are making a difference in our community. They really are. It's just fabulous. So you can contact these two groups and find out how you can help, folks. You can either give them a financial donation and or volunteer, you know, a couple hours a week. They would just love that. And it's coming up. I think they'll probably get that started in the spring for the planting season. But there's work to be done right now. So give those guys a call. And it's really how we get our community healthier. And as I said before, lower the food costs, you know, and the health care costs. And, you know, trimmer waistlines as well. You know, sort of an ancillary benefit to that.
I think it's interesting to look at the history of food. And so for centuries, we relied on food as a source of energy and health and connection. But then over the last 50 to 60 years, there were some changes in the food supply. And like we talked about, how we use food has contributed to some extent to this growing epidemic of chronic disease. So processed foods alter the food supply and interfere with the best use of those food nutrients. So, for example, hydrogenated oils, adding sugars, and then like these toxic agricultural chemicals we talked about, they do make the shelf life longer, and they make things prettier, and they appeal to our sweet tooth. But, you know, as a steady diet, they can lead us towards disease. So just recognizing this historical food that historically food represented a connection within the community and families and friends, and this loss of connection has also decreased preparation of food from scratch and then increased our intake of processed food. So we're not making food together as much as we did decades ago. So these schoolyard programs are really encouraging not only the local organic food agriculture, but also bringing back this sense of connection and learning through food. So some interesting statistics. Last I looked, maybe 20 to 25% of time at school is spent in the schoolyard, hopefully more. But fifth grade students that participated in schoolyard gardening activities scored higher in science achievement tests. They also showed significant increase in self-understanding, the ability to work in groups. Also, these multicultural gardening programs for recent immigrants helped them share their cultural heritages, feel a sense of belonging, and then also 100% of schools using environmental-based learning had students with improved behavior, not only attitudes, but also test scores.
Oh, man.
So 77% of schools with environmental-based curriculums had improved standardized test scores.
So learning through agriculture.
Yeah. And then 73% had improved grade point averages. So, and across the board, so improved science, geography, social studies, math, English. So really a wide range of increase in, not only achievement in school, but also self-understanding and ability to relate to one another. So that connection through food and bringing that back through the schoolyard garden is really amazing.
Yeah.
There was a study in Michigan State University. They looked at obesity and schoolyard gardening, and they showed that when they had healthy snacks based on the schoolyard gardening practices, the overall daily consumption of fruit increased by 26% and vegetables increased by 14%. And really, the kids just began to choose healthier options because of the education. They understood.
And obviously we're feeling better and feeling more communal with even people from, like you said, different cultures. And so that just makes them better citizens and oh my goodness, you know. And then, of course, I'm sure that they'll hear, you know how your kids learn from you. I mean, that's just how it is, you know.
Yes.
And we learn from our parents, and our kids will learn from us. And you'll see kids out there today, exhibiting these hateful things that you'll see in politics, which we're not going to get into. But they learn that from their parents. So now, if the kids are learning these things at school and working with people from the other cultures, then my goodness, maybe they'll teach the parents. You know what I mean? You know, say, hey, that's not the way it is. I'm with so and so, and this, these kids. You know what I mean? They're, can't we just get along, kind of thing. So it's just, that's why the education, that's why educating the students of the present to change the adults of the future is obviously the way to go, and why these schoolyard programs are so important.
Yeah.
I call it sustainable schools, right? You're listening to Your Health, WPVC, Progressive Voice of Charlottesville, and we will be back. I am talking to Amy Leeser. She's a nurse practitioner in the UVA system. And Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself. Why you went to nurse practice? You were a nurse first, and then you went into the MP field, right?
I was, yeah. So I started my...
Hold it.
Here I am. Yeah,
yes.
So I'm on. So, yeah, I started my career at Duke, and then I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, and then the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And so after working at several academic centers and getting some good experience and I did some intensive care, I found my home and family practice. And I just really love walking with the patient throughout different phases of life and creating that relationship. So right now, I'm at Forest Lakes Health Center, which is a University of Physicians group, part of the University of Virginia. And I am just really passionate about getting down to the root of people's health concerns and trying to restore health in the body. So I'm very fortunate that UVA has supported my continuing education. And most recently, I've completed some coursework with the Institute of Functional Medicine. And so I would encourage listeners to go to the Institute of Functional Medicine and look into that approach. And they're doing some great research in the Cleveland Clinic about health outcomes and cost reduction. So if you want to try that approach, you can certainly schedule with me. And it's a unique lens to look at healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so really, I like to look at the body kind of like this ecosystem of interconnected network of systems.
Yeah.
So like for an ecologist who would successfully restore a disease ecosystem, they have to look at the interdependence between the fish and the insects
right.
and the water. And so just like an ecologist restores health in that way, I also try to look at all the different systems of the body. And I find that kind of restoring that balance of health throughout different systems not only helps to, you know, improve disease, but also people find a higher level of energy and vitality. So it's a neat approach that I find patients are really resonating with. So
yeah, wow, that's really neat. So
yeah.
Functional medicine, they can look that up online, or
yeah, Institute of Functional Medicine.
Okay.
They can just look that up online, and certainly nutrition is a big part of my practice, and food as medicine. I'm excited to be on the show today,
yeah,
because it's really powerful. So we're. Yeah, we're definitely in this healthcare crisis. And so last time I looked, Medicare was, I think, projected to be broke by 2026. And a huge part of this healthcare spending is on metabolic diseases. So I looked at something in 2012, $245 billion spent on diabetes. So diabetes and obesity, big deal, right?
Well, they are. You know, childhood obesity and diabetes, you know, can be controlled by proper eating. You know, just it's simple and yet it seems like people are just so caught up in the fast food and the, you know, want it now. And you referenced earlier about doing things from scratch, which, of course, if you're eating the right food, then you're going to have to do stuff from scratch. And that can be a teaching moment for your kids. They help, you know, cut this up, or if they're really young, you know, break this up. You don't want to give them a knife when they're three, you know.
Yeah.
Although you can teach them, but you know what I mean. It
cautiously. Can be,
yeah, exactly. You know, and that of course brings the family closer together. And even if it's just, you know, one day a week, to you know, a couple hours, let's make, you know, a 5 days worth of food. You know, put in the freezer and get it ready. Boom, boom, boom. Then all of a sudden, you've turned real food into fast food without the process, without the pesticides.
I love that you're saying real food, and I think it's confusing for people today. What is real food?
Yeah.
Because we can really satisfy almost any craving that we have immediately, instantaneously. We don't even have to go in the kitchen, right?
Yes.
We've got drive-through, we've got microwave dinner, we have all these pre-packaged foods. So I'd like to come back to what is food. So, okay, what does Webster say, right?
Okay.
A material consisting essentially of protein, carbohydrates, and fat, used in the body of an organism to sustain growth, repair, vital processes, to furnish energy, or something that nourishes or sustains or supplies. So, you know, major components of a healthy diet or real food would be macronutrients. So that's your fats, your carbohydrates, your proteins, and micronutrients. So vitamins, minerals, phyto or plant nutrients. So this is how we define real food.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we're making decisions, healthy choices, to try to learn what is real food and what is not real food, it can be confusing.
Well, I wanted to tell you, you are listening to Your Health. This is MC Blair. I'm talking with Amy Leeser, a nurse practitioner with the UVA system. And we're having a ball over here talking about real food and how you can actually experience it with not a lot of time. You know, people say from scratch, oh, my goodness, you know, oh, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to. And we just heard the definition, the Webster's definition of, of real food. I saw a pretty good one, too. It said fake food has a list of ingredients. Real food is the ingredient, you know. So.
It's simple. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but you were talking about the microgeome or what is it?
The microbiome.
No, microbiome. That's it. Yeah. That's like cellular level stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's, you know, right in our front yard at UVA, Dr. Jonathan Kipnis and Antoine Louveau discovered mm-hmm. that brains of mice contain functional lymphatic systems, and so that carries fluid and immune cells from the cerebral spinal fluid. So this is going to change medical textbooks. This is huge, and yeah. it's happening right here. So there's a lot of movement now trying to figure out how do we apply this incredible information. So there's, you know, biomedical engineer Matt Biggs and then there's the Cancer Center director, Steven Steinway. And last I looked, they were building this predictive model of the gut microbiome. So we have trillions of healthy bacteria in our gut in health. And so we want to understand how what we eat and what we put in our body could potentially disrupt or help to sustain this healthy colonization of good bacteria. So when we look at food and we look at the choices that we make, you were talking about pasture-raised chicken. And so I think it's a good idea to be informed about what we're putting in our body. And so hopefully where you get your chicken, you can just ask your local farmer, were there antibiotics used? Were there growth hormones used? It can be kind of hard to get those answers if you get your chicken from a larger corporation. But if you get it from a local farmer, you can ask. You can talk to them. So when we use these antibiotics, say, in chicken, we have this huge rise of antibiotic-resistant infections, or these superbugs.
Superbugs, yeah.
Yeah, you probably heard about that.
I have.
So majority of the antibiotics that we use in the U.S., is used in livestock, either for medical reasons, disease prevention, or to promote growth. And most of the antibiotics used in humans are also used in animals. So genes that produce resistance in antibiotics can be transferred between bacterial species. So resistant bacteria can pass their resistant strains in a couple different ways. So contact with resistant bacteria, so eating insufficiently cooked meats, other food products, and then manure from these animals we use as fertilizer, farm workers in slaughterhouses. So we begin to pass these superbugs on. And so I know at least the FDA is discussing policy that would prevent antibiotics that are medically important for humans to be used in livestock. So
right, to keep them from using them.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, because these superbugs are a problem. So the Pew Charitable Trust is a good independent nonprofit organization to look at for further information. I know Karen Holzer, who used to work for the U.S. FDA, now works for Pew, is working with the CDC to try to figure out how to decrease the antibiotic use in livestock, because we're recognizing, there's an international movement and momentum to say, hey, this is really a problem. So knowing whether or not antibiotics are used in your meat, really is important.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And of course you can make sure they're not used in your meat by buying local pasture-raised, grass-fed beef, pasture-raised pork and poultry, and of course, organic or ecologically grown or sustainably grown produce, especially local in season, which is ideal.
Yeah, we're so lucky to be here in Zone 7, and I mean, there's so many great options for local produce and local meats, and we just there's an abundance, and it's really well priced too.
It is.
I did. So you were talking about Hayden at Free Union Grass Fed Farm,
right?
Yeah, and what I mean, disclaimer, I am friends with them. So they're amazing.
Some would buy us, right?
Yeah, yeah. So let me tell you, they work so hard, and they're not rich.
No.
Believe me. So they do what they do because they love it, and I couldn't be more grateful that they're the ones that get up early, they're up when the sun is up, and they raise healthy, happy animals that provide really incredible nutrition to the community.
And so, they have poultry, both ducks and chickens.
Ducks and chickens and beef.
Beef, yeah. And pork, right?
Yep. They have absolutely. Pigs and eggs. Yeah, so I tried to do a price comparison, okay? So mm-hmm. I figured out there's about 26 chicken nuggets in a pound, and a 20-piece chicken nugget is about $5, and Joel and Erica's chicken sells for about $4 a pound. So pretty good. When you think about the life of those chickens and all the work that goes into it, it's really not more expensive to eat local organic.
No,
you'd think it would be, but when you do the price per pound comparison and what you're getting back is
the finished product. And then of course, when you get that bucket of chicken nuggets, it's like I've seen chicken breasts, half of a chicken breast weighing 18 ounces.
Yeah.
That's a pound and a half. So then, pound plus two, and you get two of them. So now it's almost 2.5 pound breast at this small chicken that's designed to do a 10 ounce total breast, mm-hmm. Is carrying this extra weight. And as we know, when we get, when people are overweight, things go haywire in their bodies, and they suffer from all kinds of problems. And so that's the chicken nugget. That's where the chicken nugget's coming from, this, full of antibiotics and all that, and hormones. And then, of course, when you go to a place like Free Union, pastured chickens, then you're not getting
the antibiotics. You're not getting the growth
and you're getting
hormones.
So much more protein and nutrients, which we're going to talk about on our next segment when we break down a typical meal. So you mentioned earlier where somebody could set up an appointment with you or to discuss nutrition and that sort of thing. How would one go about doing that?
So, I'm at Forest Lakes Health Center, and the number there, 975-7700. So just call them up. And I do really individualized assessments to not only look at to do a diet history and what are you eating, but also, nutrition plan interventions not only involve what you want to restrict and what you want to encourage in your diet, but also the distribution of macronutrients and micronutrients that we talk about, but also sleep and exercise and restoration. And so I think it's important to think that to understand those molecular mechanisms that underlie disease and provide the basis for an individualized nutritional intervention so that we can restore that health. And to recognize that we have unique genetic makeups and that we also have unique social and environmental factors that affect our health. So getting a really good clinical history, exam, lab tests really helps to identify nutritional imbalances, mm-hmm. deficiencies, and helps helps me to be more successful in restoring health for folks. Yeah.
Well, I've also, done in my research, I found out that we have these trace minerals, and I found out that that's gotten by the animals eating on healthy soil. The soil's the thing, and so when you get one of these grass farms, certified grass farms like John Whiteside out there at Wolf Creek, he was here as a guest at one point, and that way the animals are getting these trace minerals right up just by being on the soil. And then, of course, drinking the water and then, eating the grass, they're just getting these. And those kind of minerals just aren't available in factory farms. They just don't exist. And I believe, aren't those pretty important, the trace minerals?
Yeah. They definitely, just like we were talking about distribution of minerals and nutrients. So,
yep.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, we talked about in pasture-raised chicken. I know the FDA approved the use of steroid hormones for growth in food producing animals. So that's estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Those are things that I prescribe in my clinic and I don't take those prescriptions lightly. They have some powerful effects, and so and then what the chicken is eating is
So we'll
get into that. Worth looking into.
All right, we're going to get into that in our next segment, where, as I promised, we'll break down a typical meal and talk about the nutrients and you know why you should be doing that. So we'll be back. Well, we had the messages already, so and so we are back. I'm talking with Amy Leeser, a nurse practitioner from the UVA system out at Forest Lakes. And we're going to break down a typical menu. I think we had, what we have? We had roast chicken and mashed potatoes and green beans and
bread and butter.
Bread and butter. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Don't forget
oh boy,
dessert,
oh boy.
Though.
Oh, maybe some, how about some ice cream or something like that. So, well, good, excellent. So let's see. Go ahead. I think you have some stuff on that. I guess the chicken. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of, let's see. So we kind of talked about chicken, but it is a good source of lean protein. The USDA recommends 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram that we weigh.
Right.
And Canada recommends even more, so 1 to 1.2 grams per kilogram. So when I do diet histories, I see a lot of people not getting enough protein. And so this is a great way to get your protein. Yep. And then we talked about green beans. So we talked about your vitamins and your minerals. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a pasture-raised chicken.
Yeah. So we've got vitamin A, vitamin C, D, B, calcium, iron, magnesium, potassium, sodium, protein, fiber. So really, really good. So let's talk about fruits and vegetables. So researchers at Harvard School of Public Health followed 133,468 United States men and women. And they found that increasing the consumption of fruits and non-starchy vegetables was inversely associated with weight changes. So important differences by type suggested that other characteristics of these foods influence the magnitude of the association with weight change. So better, based on the nutrient composition, some of the particular fruits and vegetables may be more or less beneficial for maintaining or achieving weight. So this is just saying, yes, fruits and vegetables, this is important. There's so much research out there, and this is why. So that's green beans. And then we can talk about the mashed potatoes and gravy, right? So I did this comparison between sweet potatoes and white potatoes.
It's funny. Sweet potatoes are from the Morning Glory family.
Oh, really?
They really are. They're,
oh, okay.
They're not even a potato. So it's a, you know, I've always said, well, they're squash or, you know, nope. So in the Morning Glory family, it's for root, of course.
Interesting.
And they are not potatoes, but they're so good for you.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. So the white potatoes had 14 IU of vitamin A, where sweet had 22,000 IU. So big differences. And then there's more of the protein and the fiber. But even more interesting, I think, is purple potatoes. This is the super spud.
Antioxidants.
Slice into a purple potato, I feel like I'm eating a delicacy. It's like rare and beautiful.
Yeah.
And so purple potatoes, they have not only the phosphorus, copper, and thiamine and niacin, but they have this. They have four times the amount of antioxidants than the white potatoes. And so this is this free radical scavenging capabilities that come from the anthocyanin pigment. So. Yeah, anthocyanin. So American Cancer Society has done all kinds of cool research on this. They showed lower blood pressures from this and lots of the same health benefits that we get from broccoli, spinach, Brussels sprouts. And then the Journal of Biochemistry and Molecular Toxicology found that the chlorogenic acid found in purple potatoes mm-hmm. actually delayed the development of blood clots in mice. So maybe some anticoagulant effects here.
Yeah.
So that's big. And then for the runners out there, you know, forever we said, you know, carb load with the pasta. That has kind of taken the front stage. But potatoes might actually do a better job, particularly purple potatoes.
Right.
So not only the night before, but also the day after the event, the potatoes provided more energy delivering complex carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are they really easy to prepare, but the common concern with... So with the athletes, we want the potassium, and that's in there. It's got the electrolytes, and the purple potato contains 341 milligrams of potassium per half cup, which is 10% of our daily recommended volume. So anyway, the potato is, I think, the perfect carb for the athlete.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You're listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPVC. The progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm MC Blair, and we're talking with Amy Leeser, a nurse practitioner with the UVA health system out there at the
Forest Lakes Health Center.
Health Center,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And is that, you're driving up 29 North, is that on the right hand side?
It is, yeah. Right
past where Forest Lakes community is, right?
It's kind of right in that area. So
mm-hmm.
Timberlake Grill is on the way there. It's right across from where you find Harris Teeter, and
right.
Target would be on the left side there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay. So it's across from that
mm-hmm.
big complex with Target and
Harris Teeter. Yeah, kind of tucked away, but close into the residential area.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yes. So golly.
We talked about bread and butter, too.
Oh, bread and butter.
So fat, that's fun. There's this big controversy about fats, right? Good
right.
fats and bad fats, and that can get complicated really quickly, and people get sort of confused.
Mm-hmm.
So butter is a saturated fat, and there has been studies that show that saturated fat can increase our low-density lipoprotein. So I think that it's interesting to look at the history. So over the years, we've decreased fat consumption over about 40 years, but
mm-hmm.
yet the rate of metabolic disease and obesity rates has continued to increase. So my understanding is that in the 70s, we learned that dietary fat raised LDL. And then in the late 70s, we learned that increasing LDL increased our risk for heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So then the McGovern Commission released these dietary guidelines, and we were told we need to decrease our intake of dietary fat. So why hasn't this decrease in dietary fat helped with metabolic diseases like obesity and diabetes?
You know, the wrong kind of fat from the wrong kind of sources.
So Dr. Robert Lustig, who's a pediatric endocrinology with the University of San Francisco, explained that there's two types of LDL. There's this small dense, and then there's this large buoyant. So when we measure LDL, we measure both. But the large buoyant really doesn't have anything to do with cardiovascular disease, is what Dr. Lustig says. And so because they float and they can't get into the surface of the cells that line our arterial wall. So it sounds like it's actually the small, dense LDL that's increasing with our carbohydrate, especially these refined, processed.
Refined. That's the key word, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And so they get under the surface of our endothelial cells, and that's what causes the atherogenesis, which is causing the cardiovascular disease. So the fat that we really want to avoid is the trans fats or these hydrogenated fats, these processed fats.
And processed foods, exactly.
Yeah. And then also, you know, where did the butter come from? So corn-fed cow, grass-fed cow. So there's some the research that shows that cows grazing on pasture that received no supplemental feed had 500% more conjugated linoleic acid.
Yeah, CLA. That is a protein associated with anti-cancer, right?
Yeah, anti-cancer and fat loss, and then also increased concentrations of omega-3 fatty
mm-hmm.
acids, those healthy fats that are found in milk from grass-fed calves.
Grass-fed, right, exactly.
Yeah, so lots of research to support benefits of omega-3 fatty acids. Lots of talk about the Mediterranean diet and all the benefits of that, which is high in omega-3 fats.
So, right.
So that's kind of maybe will help some listeners with the confusion about fats and why do we need to, you know, why is grass-fed butter better? And
well, there you go. Yeah, you just said it.
And so I hopefully mean, that's... Say,
yeah, 400%. Come on, give me a break,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's and, a big, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. And those, that butter can be found. There are, I'm not going to mention any brands, but they are, as a matter of fact, I even saw one at Costco, which was a brand that I buy. I used to buy it at other places, and there it was at Costco. I said, heck yeah, man. You know, save a few bucks, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you can also find these products at if you can't shop from a local farmer, you can find, you know, good organic produce at Integral Yoga, one of our sponsors, and also at Whole Foods Markets, which
Absolutely.
Is also one of our sponsors. So these things can be obtained right here in River City, as we say, you know.
That's
and
a great option.
Yeah, you know. So
and then there's, you know,
bread.
So,
yeah,
should
bread.
We talk about should we get into that?
Let me ask you this about I've heard lots of things about different breads. Obviously, if you're using, you know, locally grown wheat or different kinds of flours to make your bread, it's good. What about the sprouted? Have you heard anything about sprouted bread? It's something about the phytic acid reduction or?
Yeah. So I think when I look at breads, really, it does get complicated quickly, but the amount in which the bread is refined is going to show how much nutrient we get from that bread. So when you look at sprouting, well, is it refined after sprouting? Mm-hmm. But certainly when you sprout vegetables, that's when they are releasing more nutrients. So I don't have any studies today to really back it. It's good. I mean, I know that that's when plants are releasing a lot of nutrients and they're more available. Mm-hmm. So I do think that the sprouted bread is a great way to go. But grains that are unrefined, because when you refine the grain, you modify the natural composition, and that usually involves removing the bran and the germ, and then there's different amounts in which you refine the grain. So
you're stripping away the nutrients, basically.
Yeah, so the tinier the particles, the more refined the grain is, and then the faster your blood sugar will rise.
Yeah.
So then you get into, you know, your increased risk for diabetes and obesity because
there
of that
is.
Higher glycemic index.
That's
so
it.
The more refined the grain is, the higher the glycemic index, and then the more your blood sugar is going to rise. Yes.
You're listening to Your Health on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And the last couple of minutes of our show, we are talking with Amy Leeser at the UVA. She's a nurse practitioner at the UVA Health System, Forest Lakes Forest Lakes Health Center.
Yeah, it's
I was
going to
say Wellness Center, but that's something. Anyway, so Forest Lakes Health Center. Okay. And actually, you can contact them and set up an appointment with Amy, and she would be more than happy to help you look at your, you know, general health and your diet and help you refine your diet
in fun ways. One thing that I like to talk about is satisfaction from food, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Do we really have to, you know, eat this boring or bland food to
no.
be healthy? No, really. You know, when you look at other countries that are famous for their culinary achievements, like France and Spain and Italy, they don't really have these rates of obesity.
No, they don't.
Yeah. So by eating foods that are maybe higher in the glycemic or lower in this glycemic index and have more balance, you may have more satisfied over time. So we know that taste is not an inherent characteristic of food. So we're not really born with, we are born with these taste preferences for sweet rather than bitter, because it's a survival instinct that we want to drink breast milk and we don't want to have toxic products, which are more bitter.
Right.
And so everyone is kind of born with this natural instinct of this sweet tooth. And so we develop and we can appreciate large varieties of tastes over time. And And so if we look at biological responses, you know, if you look at the first time that you drank coffee or alcohol, you probably didn't like it. But after you realize that it has pleasurable effects, you learn that you learn to like that flavor over time. And so there are fun ways to change the diet and to look at that biological response so that you don't feel like you're restricting your diet and you don't feel like, certainly we don't want you to be hungry. And so there are definitely fun ways to do this, to explore new culinary ventures and new spices and flavors and meet your local farmers and have fun with it.
That is so cool when you meet your local farmer and you're talking to them and you find out their story, and you see their families, and you see what they grow, and the, I guess it's a fire in their eyes, you know, when they're talking about
the passion,
it. You know, it
yeah.
is. It's very passionate.
They do it because they're passionate
they
about
do,
it.
They
yeah,
do.
And they
you
love
know,
the animals I've, that they raise.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the produce. I was talking with Wally and Susan Parks out at Broadhead Farm. And they have their produce producers, and of course they have chickens and eggs as well. But they are just—they're so passionate. And I visited out there; it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. It just brings you closer to the source. You know, it's just fabulous. And I will say this: that since my wife and I went on the real food diet, if you will,
sure.
As much local as possible, organic when we couldn't find the local. We haven't had so much as a sniffle in 12 years. Now, we both got two or three times a year, you know, feeling bum, kind of maybe we call it a cold, or if it lasted a couple of days, and so, oh, we must have got a touch of the flu and that kind of thing. We haven't had that. Now, you know, that's something to think about. Well, you had a great, we've had a good show here. We were talking with Amy Leeser. Hi,
yeah.
Amy.
Yeah, thank
Bye.
You. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to be on the show, and I'm so grateful that you brought me on as a guest, and I've learned
really
so much from
guest.
You today. So
yeah.
thank
well,
you.
Will you come back at some point?
I would love to come
oh,
back.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.